Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello and welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh and I'm joined by Tillage Editor Andy Doyle. It's wet and windy out there and we've plenty of tillage events this week, and as a result of that we're recording a bit earlier than usual, so we're recording on Tuesday evening this week. Much of the fieldwork is fairly under control now, Andy. Still some spring crops awaiting sprays, but I was talking to Tramline's farmers, they're getting combines ready and cleaning sheds and stores. Some people out walking for grass weeds. You were in the field this week for the pages in the paper, Andy. What are you seeing or hearing out there?
Yeah, and I was perhaps a little bit surprised to see sprayers in wheat fields earlier this week. I thought a lot of that job was done and well done on wheat at this stage, but obviously not. Some of the tea trees were just going on to crops, but that's very much the exception. I was in Carlow earlier today, and it's certainly the effect of the droughts very visible there. Spring crops, winter crops, patches appearing now in fields all the way from Castledermot into Carlow on that lighter vein of land, sitting on either gravel or another few place here and there sitting on rock. And it's not just confined to Carlow, because I was across much of East Wicklow and down into North Wexford last weekend, and far fewer signs of patches in crops, but very definitely crops showing signs of drought, maybe more so in Wicklow than in North Wexford, with leaves curled up on wheat crops. And surprisingly, in that type of scenario, also quite a bit of septoria on the move in some of those crops that had suffered drought. So they obviously got rain at some point a while ago that drove the additional disease in those crops. Spring barley crops, if I can just go there first, generally very good and generally very clean. The definite exception to those comments will be dwarf virus. And I'm saying dwarf virus rather than barley yellow dwarf virus, because the symptoms are just so variable. It's not consistent with what we would have traditionally called barley yellow dwarf virus, but certainly yellow leaves are visible. They're largely hidden now in spring barley because the heads are up over the top. But I certainly saw one crop of wheat, spring wheat, where the dwarfing symptom and the yellowing symptom was very evident in it. But again, it was predominantly single leaf yellowing rather than full plant with half yellow leaves, was what I was seeing. So just don't know what the consequence of it is going to be. Speaking to somebody earlier today who told me they had a big problem in winter barley, and they said it's biting because they can see that the grain fill is not what it's supposed to be. And therefore, it looks like some of this problem at least is going to turn into a significant penalty on yields in parts of the country. But back to the running around, Siobhan, spring barley generally looking good, generally very clean. Lower leaves now turning yellow because of the density of the crop and the lack of light penetration. Yeah. Good heads, an occasional grain here and there gaping, which basically means it hasn't yet been fertilized and may not now be fertilized, because a lot of those more forward crops now, they have the grains kind of at full length. They've already filled to the length of the grain, and now they're just going to shove in dry matter in there to fill up the starch, etc. That's going on. So generally, you'd have to stand back and say it's a crop that's looking well, and an awful lot of farmers that I've spoken to over the last week think that these are the best crops they have ever grown. Always a dangerous sentiment to express out loud, but hopefully it can be delivered in practice. And certainly getting a little bit of rain out of the way this week, while it's a nuisance in some instances, it's good to be having it behind us rather than having all that rain to fall ahead of us at some point. One other point I would make about spring barley is that there was bits of lodging beginning to appear. Okay, there had been some rain, but not a lot of rain at that stage. So there's probably going to be a good bit more lodging in spring barley by the time people are listening to this. Hopefully not extensive, but I was in a lot of crops, and some of them are, they just seem weak. They'd already shown signs of having leaned over some weeks ago and stood back up straight again. So if there was a lot of water sat in them, they might very well go over in bigger quantities. But in the main, I think the crop is going to be solid. A lot of people have growth regulators, etc., out. So we look at, it's a crop that's certainly worth looking forward to at this point in time. Winter wheat, a lot of winter wheat along that road. I would have said more than I would traditionally have expected to see. And I could say the same for oilseed rape. But the vast majority of wheat, like the barley, it just looks really good. Good full crops, good big heads, grain filling progressing well, and 95% of crops being very, very clean. And that, again, is very good to see. A good few bean crops as well, again, looking very well. One crop of beans, and I couldn't but notice it when I went into it, a crop of spring beans. The lowest pods were over a foot off the ground. And, you know, that's something that you would long for in a crop of beans. I don't know whether it's reflected in all crops or not, but it certainly should mean that the crop will go into the tank rather than a chunk of it having to go back out on the ground, regardless of how low you can get the blade of the combine. What else was I seeing? Spring wheat, again, a crop that's looking very, very well out there where there's not excessive BYDV. And that, again, is a good thing. What else was I seeing? Well, I'm sure I saw
winter
lots of
barley,
other...
Andy.
Yeah, winter barley.
Just going to the winter barley. Yeah, is like some of it around that area. Like, is it going to burn in too quick now? I know a lot of farmers are afraid of the speed that winter barley is coming in at.
Across where I was, the answer is no. I saw very little barley that's going to be cut inside of the next fortnight, and a lot of it is going to be up to a month away. You could visibly see green, albeit that there was variability in the field. But you could visibly see a big chunk of the field still being relatively green in colour. I'm not saying that the leaves were green, they weren't, but the crop was green. One crop of six row that I went into, I couldn't but notice that when I went in, because the first thing that struck me was I was looking at brackling taking place in a crop that's at least 3 weeks away from harvest. And then I just looked a little closer, and it was actually the later tillers that were brackling. And you look closer again, and a six-row crop, a lot of these little tillers had a very tiny stem under them. And that's why it was literally breaking over. But the seeds, it was about 12 to 15 seeds per head. But there was almost nothing in them, and there was going to be no more in them. So they're probably going to blow out the back at harvest time. So we can expect a lot of volunteers to appear behind some crops this year. But
I think that BYDV and the winter barley that people will be looking out for are seeing now, and that farmer that you spoke to, that they saw, like, a lot of that infection probably occurred around January. And I think farmers, you know, should take that into account and not be too hard on their programs either. You know, that those aphids probably came in around, you know, in January and February.
Yeah, and that's something that's impossible for us to predict. I know we talked about it going back then and talked about the risk that was associated with it. But, you know, generally in the past, we've always said that that January, February infection, it's generally not nearly as serious as an infection that would have taken place much earlier. And I think the problem we had this year is that we must have had aphid multiplication early on early sown crops, and that they probably gave rise to an amount of additional spread subsequently. Whether we got good control where aphicides were used or not, I don't know. That's back to the researchers to tell us what has been going on.
Yeah.
But I certainly would really like to get to the bottom of all of these variable symptoms that are there, whether they're different variants of a virus or what they are. But I think we'd know more going forward if we could understand what actually was going on. And I suppose I said earlier in the year that the researchers can't learn anything if we don't get years when there's relatively big problems. So hopefully we'll be able to maximise the learning from research this year.
Absolutely, yeah, take the positive out of it. Andy Blackgrass, we had that article in the paper last week about making blackgrass a noxious weed and calling on the minister to do it. Quite a bit of reaction and a lot of positive reaction from tillage farmers in particular who want to see this happen. And I suppose, look, if they want to see this happen, the best thing to do about it is shout about it and make your voice heard. And, you know, the farm orgs will have a role to play in this if they want it to happen. But what reactions did you get?
Very, very, very same, Siobhan. You know, people ringing about it, because I think what's happening now is that more and more people who are watching what's going on are seeing this weed appearing in places where they weren't expecting to see it, and they have no idea how it got there. At least on the face of it, they have no idea how it got there. But for as long as we have a lot of machine movement between farms, it is a very definite risk. But movement is not confined to machines. You know, we can have all kinds of wildlife spreading it. It can come in soil. You know, people walking crops from, everybody is curious about what black grass goes in, it looks like. So you go into a field where there's black grass and you don't clean your boots before you walk into your own. Yeah. Particularly if it's a wet day and you carry in clay, you know, seeds move in clay. Yeah. So there's all kinds of biosecurity things that we have heavily ignored in the past, and they quickly come back to bite you if you're not vigilant. And I think you mentioned earlier about people out walking crops and pulling the last of the grass weeds, etc. The most important piece of husbandry for the year in any crop will be to walk the crops thoroughly now, rogue what's possible, and pull anything that you don't know. Don't worry about getting it identified until after you've pulled it, you know, don't risk any seeds being returned. But if you have one plant this year and only one and you've pulled it, there could still be another one there for next year. But just always take a note of where problems are occurring so that you have a better handle on where to go back and look for them next year.
Yeah, really important point, Andy, yeah. On the other tillage page this week, we have a profile of Jonathan Kelly. Jonathan farms in County Derry, and he's growing rye for a digester, and he's a young farmer, and he was mainly beef, and now he's mainly tillage and has some beef left over. So has some beef as well. So a really interesting story. I visited Jonathan while we were on the Itlis trip there a few weeks ago. So that's on the tillage pages as well. OK, we mentioned at the start about open days, and there's a lot of tillage events and open days this week, last week and over the last month or so. So last week we were at the Gold Crop Open Day in Dunlear, and at that open day on the trial site, I caught up with John Dunn, and John Dunn is the cereal variety manager with Gold Crop. So here's what John had to say.
John, great plots here in Dunlear, great work going into them. You have a few up and coming varieties as always, so can you tell us about some of them? Maybe we'll start with the winter wheat. So I heard Dawson, your new variety, described as Dawson is awesome one time, is it?
Yeah, Siobhan, well, I suppose it's a variety we're delighted to have. I suppose it's building on the strengths of one of its parents, Costello, which would be well known to a lot of growers and people in the trade. Costello has always been the benchmark for grain quality and straw strength, but that grain quality isn't something that you get in every variety of wheat. And when I say grain quality, I mean resistance to sprouting and specific weight. And Dawson, thankfully, is bringing that, but with increased yield and better disease resistance. So Dawson, it's a cross between Costello and another variety, Kerrin. The Cairn is very, very good at tillering and has high yield potential. So they've incorporated that with Costello to create Dawson. We've a lot of it out. We could have got it recommended last autumn, but we didn't have enough seed. So we waited a year to build up seed stocks. Now we have 30% of the seed availability in the form of Dawson. I grew up myself last year for seed, and I have it again this year over an increased acreage, and I'm thrilled with it. So it looks like a really good one. And unfortunately in Ireland, we're never far away from a wet harvest. And so you want a wheat variety that's not going to sprout in a hurry. So if your field of Dawson is after sprouting, you needn't look at the rest of them, because the rest of the fields will have sprouted. It's just so resilient. So yeah, we've high hopes for it.
John, in the spring barley, we heard a lot about distilling and brewing and non-GN varieties. Yeah. So what's up and coming in those plots?
Okay, so I suppose we had our newest variety on display there. That's Geraldine. So it's on the Irish recommended list this spring. It's the highest yielding at 105, with very good disease resistance and good straw strength. Now, as you pointed out, Siobhan, distilling and feed and brewing, they're all different segments of the spring barley market. But I suppose non-GN is becoming a standard in spring barley for malting now. So non-GN, it's a distilling requirement, really. It means a variety produces very, very low levels of a byproduct called glycosylic nitrile. So some varieties are genetically better at producing very low levels of that. It's something you don't want in whiskey. And Geraldine would be a non-GN variety, and most of the varieties coming through now would be non-GN producers. Yeah. So following on from Geraldine, we have two in the pipeline. One is Gretchen from a German breeder called Brian, and we have another one called Spinner from a UK breeder called Sacobra. They're currently undergoing DUS testing. Agronomically very, very strong. Both suitable for malting, and Spinner has non-GN status also. They have to complete their DUS tests, which will be completed this year. So fingers crossed they'll successfully complete those tests. But again, look, they're an increased yield over Planet. They're probably 2 to 3% higher yielding than Planet again, with good straw. And Gretchen in particular has extremely good resistance to brackling. So they're coming into spring wheats.
Cool. Yeah.
Or in the spring barleys, excuse me.
One variety I forgot to mention, John, and we're in the wheat now, Mayflower. So that's up and coming and fairly good on Septoria.
Yeah, Siobhan, I suppose during the talks I mentioned that as a company, Gold Crop are doing an awful lot of work in terms of Septoria. Our main screening trials are based in Cork, which is Septoria Central, really. And a lot of the breeders cannot believe the levels of Septoria that they see when they come to Cork. So we're doing some very, very advanced screenings there. So we're screening close on 900 varieties every year of winter wheat. So we're doing some of that for breeders. Mayflower is probably one of the first varieties that we've seen to come out of that process. It's on the UK recommended list currently with a score of 8 out of 9 for Septoria. Now, it has at least another year to do an official trials before we can legally sell it in Ireland. But we've started a small bit of seed production of it already to start building it up. As a change from some of the previous varieties that were very good in Septoria, you know, we had varieties over the years that were extremely good in Septoria, but they had other shortcomings, usually in the form of grain quality. They were low on the bushel or weak on sprouting or fusarium. Mayflower is a breakaway from that. Mayflower is actually milling wheat, so it has very high KPH and very good Hagberg falling number. So it has the disease resistance and the grain quality, thankfully. And it also has PCH1 resistance to eye spot, which is not something you see every day in wheat varieties. I suppose as a variety, it has more time to do because we're only building it up, and it has to be nationally listed in Ireland. But it's one we're very, very interested in.
And goodbye to Barra, John. No more Barra.
Yeah, Siobhan, yeah. After decades of production, Barra, yeah, we finally decided to cease production of it. Actually, it was the benchmark for grain quality for so many years. Nothing could get even close to it or not even match it. And it outlived a lot of other varieties and outlived a lot of chemical products in that time. Mm. And it was the benchmark and was the go-to comparison. But I suppose, look, Isabel has come along now, and Isabel was the first variety to match and actually pass Barra from a KPH point of view, with other agronomic strengths like disease and straw strength also. So yeah, Barra is the final year of it. Some seed will be kept in cold storage by the breeder in Sweden as a genetic resource should we ever want it. But in terms of commercial production, it is now finished.
Thanks very much, John. Hopefully there's another Barra in some form out in the flats.
Please God, yeah.
So plenty of information there from John on the new varieties. I also spoke to Donal Fitzgerald, who's a general manager at Gold Crop. And Donal was really excited, you know, to talk about crops that are coming through that can help Irish agriculture to become more sustainable.
Donal, we just had a great walk around the trial site here in Dunleer with Gold Crop. And I suppose there was a big emphasis on crops like spring beans and oilseed rape and, you know, rotational crops, but they also have other added value as well.
Yeah, well, I suppose you go back to rotational crops is what it's all about.
Yeah.
There's a, you know, it's very obvious that your cereal crop after a break crop, be it beans, oilseed rape, oats, anything like potatoes or anything like that, that's always going to yield more than something that's growing continuously. And it's interesting to note from talking to growers that more and more of them are actually growing less second and continuous crops, and they're focusing on rotation. And I remember meeting guys here years ago that would have been growing continuous wheat.
Yeah,
I don't meet them anymore. They're all realizing that, you know, continuous wheat is not on the right path. You need to have rotations. And of course, you know, the tree crop rule and everything else, and the talk of IPM and everything else that goes with good crop rotation, good agricultural practice, that's encouraging rotation anyway. And of course these crops have to leave a margin too. And you mentioned about the value added, I suppose, in terms of oilseed rape, you know, but we're growing oilseed rape for oil. We could also be producing protein cake with that. The problem we have is that we're not crushing it at home. The oilseed rape product has to be exported out of the country. And then the cake that's produced from the crush might not end up coming back to Ireland. So that's something that we're losing out on. Beans, you know, there's obviously huge demand for protein feeds in Ireland. We're about 700,000 tonnes imports every year. And we're only producing about 100,000 tonnes of beans. And even at that, we're probably not producing that much, to be honest. We're at less than 10,000, 12,000 hectares. We need to be trying to get up to 100,000 tonnes, and which is a long way off what the 700,000 target is. So, but the, you know, the schemes are there to try and help develop that. If we can just get more consistency into the crops, which is what we're trying to look at, that will help.
Yeah, and like these crops, I suppose some people would fear break crops a little bit. You know, it's maybe easier to go out and grow a cereal, but more and more farmers are turning to break crops. And from what I see in the field here today, you're making it easier for farmers to grow these crops. So things like, you know, hybrid oilseed rape varieties, the Tyrannus pod shasher as well, all these things. So can you tell us maybe about some of the things that we saw around here today?
Yeah, so like you mentioned oilseed rape, and I think oilseed rape is one of the crops that we've seen the largest increase in genetic improvement over the last, say, 6, 7, 8 years. John, my colleague, has done an analysis of just looking at the recommended list from, say, 2009 and looking at it today and see where we've gone in terms of variety improvement. And it's massive. We're nearly 30% up in terms of yield potential in about 7 or 8 years. We've had, you know, pod shatter, you mentioned, a huge thing. It means that you're not going to lose the seed in a bad harvest year. We have turnip virus yellows resistance, which means that you're going to get more stability in yield. We have a nitrogen flex in some of the varieties now, which means you're going to get more utilization of nitrogen, even if it's delayed. We're learning more about the crop too, of course, in the agronomy side, because, you know, the GAI index and light leaf spot control has improved because, again, we have more resistance in the varieties. So, you know, we've a target in our book there of 1.9 tonnes per acre of winter oilseed rape as being, you know, a realistic target. You know, a few years ago, that might have been 1.6. And that 0.3 of a tonne now that we can get just by, you know, varietal improvements and agronomy improvements, that's worth a lot of money nowadays, you know. So that makes a big difference to, I suppose, reinforcing that break crops are not just the poor relation when it comes to profitability. And the reliability of, the consistency of performance. If we can get, if farmers put a crop in the ground, like, and they can get a reliable result year on year, well, then that's going to give them more confidence to grow that crop again. And if it pays and they can see the benefit in the subsequent crop of getting maybe an extra half ton an acre on their winter wheat or their spring barley, whatever it is, that's good too. So that's just on the oilseed rape. We have beans. There's another interesting thing that's coming on beans where we're looking not just at the yield, but we're actually looking at the protein content of the bean itself. And I think that's a positive development. We have a variety in trial now, for example, at last year, was 5% higher in protein content than in the controls. So, you know, again, if the focus is on trying to maximise the amount of protein we grow per hectare, not just necessarily the tons of beans. So, and if we can, you know, get merchants to look at that and say, well, look, if I can get this variety or that type of
bean per se, it has a higher protein content into my mill, that's going to make it more efficient for me.
Yeah.
So they're the type of initiatives, and just two examples, I suppose, of what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah. Another crop that we saw today, rye.
Yeah.
And you have a new variety out there as well. I might have the pronunciation wrong. Baresi, is it?
Yeah, Baresi. Yeah. I asked the breeder, was it after the guy who played football, AC Milan, is Baresi, but he wasn't sure. We have a variety called Baresi, which is a little bit better than the existing variety we have called Performer. And again, rye is a crop that has, you know, it's small, relatively speaking, at the moment, but huge increase in the last 12 months. We've 2,700 hectares in the ground, where we only had 1,300 hectares the previous year, where we only had 500 hectares the year before. So it's a crop that we've seen in trials that can do as good as winter wheat under a high input situation. But we also know that it can use less nitrogen and it can use less fungicide. And if we are to meet the targets of the farm to fork and we're going to look at producing things with less inputs, you know, rye is something that ticks the box.
Yeah.
It also, you know, the feed wise, it has a higher amino acid content, which might be useful to pigmen in particular.
Yeah.
It has been very big in Denmark. And there is a place potentially for it too in whole crop rations. And if we run into problems with maize, and I don't want to preempt problems here now, but if we do run into problems with maize because of seed treatment, maybe hybrid rye is something we need to look at. So there's a few guys around the country now that are looking at this. And the other side of rye is that it's more drought tolerant than your typical cereal. And, you know, as we get drier summers and if we're on light land and less fertile land, this type of crop can tick a box.
Yeah, I was on the Atlas trip last week and I actually saw rye growing on sand on reclaimed land from the sea. So, it's certainly drought tolerant. Thanks very much, Donal.
Cheers, Siobhan. Thank you.
So great to hear from Donal there and plenty of food for thought. On the news pages this week, Andy, Barry Murphy was down at the Gene Editing Symposium in University College Cork. And I suppose there's a consultation ongoing at the minute in the EU about gene editing, and anyone can submit that consultation. It's open from the 29th of April to the 22nd of July, and I suppose that event was to inform people about gene editing. This is really topical at the minute, especially with what we talked about last week on the podcast about the new sustainable use directive. So what's your thinking, Andy, on gene editing and everything that's going on with it at the minute?
Gene editing is best described as a technology for the present as distinct from the future. And the problem that we have in Europe is that we're still not allowed to use it at any level in agriculture anyway. It's a critical piece of technological potential for coping with altering the genetic makeup of, well, plants and animals, but we are talking specifically about plants. For those who remember Clare, or for those who currently, for example, acknowledge the problem with net blotching planet, imagine if you could go into planet and just fix that susceptibility to net blotch. What that would mean to the variety going forward, and to the cost of growing it. So there's lots of ways in which we can edit both the traits that farmers have to deal with, the traits that processors need in the varieties they use, and even various characteristics that would be good ultimately for consumers at the end of the day. So we're talking there either about the crops that we grow on a broad scale in fields, or vegetables and other foods that can be manipulated to have higher concentrations of this or lower concentrations of that. You know, imagine being able to go into beans and remove the negative nutritional factors from beans, or increase the protein content of wheat, or maybe even, you know, something like significantly reduce the risk of sprouting in wheat for the occasional time that we get a real bad year, where sprouting becomes a destroyer of grain quality. So there's huge potential in the technology. The one thing that I would warn people against is that when GM was very much in the focus as a new technology 25 plus years ago, I suppose now, scientists at the time kind of promised every possible solution to every potential problem. That is not what subsequently transpired. Some of these things are still more difficult to do than just it would seem on the surface. So let's not overpromise. Let's find what's potentially workable, use it, and then learn as we go from the use of the technology and feed it in slowly and safely into consumers so that we don't meet with this completely negative reaction that GM met with almost three decades ago now. As we in Europe look towards the constraining of the use of chemicals, the only tools we have really to displace them will be a combination of integrated pest management and genetic tools that can build in better resistance either to pests or to diseases, and maybe even alter plants in terms of how they allow weeds to grow with them or amongst them, so that weeds become a lesser issue for crops in terms of either competition or in terms of their yield robbing effect. So all of those things are there. We need the technology and we need it as soon as possible, but it's probably still the bones of 10 years before European farmers will really have field access to the technology. And while I say that it's a genetic tool, I think it's probably fair to say that the amount of work and research that's going to have to go into delivering those genetic improvements, I don't think they will necessarily come free when the time comes. I think there will be a cost on them into the seed system or through the seed system. If they result in net saving in cost, and if they mean that the tools that we have will last a lot longer because we depend less on them, then that's a very good thing. But I think it's also important to remember that a lot of the time when we get genetic resistance to things, genetic resistance in a crop can equally fail the same as organisms can become resistant to chemicals. So it's the synergy of being able to use both in combination that helps one to protect the other. And that's really where we would be looking to into the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As the toolbox, I suppose as the number of tools we have declines, you know, we need to look at things like gene editing. On the news pages this week, we're talking about nitrates, and look, I suppose we're inundated with nitrates queries, Andy, really, about overwinter stubble cultivation. So we still don't know the exact rules around overwinter stubble. So we know that the nitrates came in March, and what came in at that point is the regulation now. So farmers are still required to cultivate within 7 days of harvest or within 7 days of baling, and in total 14 days after harvest. There is clarification to be provided on the nitrates. So overwinter stubble needs to be left in order to provide habitats for some of the endangered bird species. And we still are waiting on that clarification from the department. It was supposed to come by the 1st of July. I suppose it could still come by the 1st of July, but looks like now that it won't. So the department have said that it will come in the near future. So as of now, farmers are to continue on, and they're not to leave any of their stubble idle. They're to cultivate all their stubble. I suppose, like, this is bringing up, farmers, the harvest is upon us now, as you said, Andy. People will be cutting in the next 10 days, and weather permitting, of course. And we still don't have clarification from the department on nitrates. And this isn't just the case on nitrates. We have CAP 23 coming down the line, and CAP 23 for tillage farmers starts now. People are now planning their rotations, planning what seed they want for catch crops, planning their break crops. And if people are to apply for the eco scheme, where you have 20% of your land, your crop land in a break crop, then they need to, you know, they need to be careful about what catch crop they plant, and they need to decide, if they need to leave the 20% for a catch crop as well. So a lot of clarification needed on these things for tillage farmers.
Indeed, Siobhan, and if I can slip back just to the nitrates issue for a minute, I think at the end of the process, I was directly involved in discussions on the proposals for nitrates. And I think I would have to say that I was disappointed at the end of it, that maybe not so much that the stubble cultivation became obligatory. Stubble cultivation is a good thing, but having fixed dates, days and dates on having to get it done can be extremely impractical at farm level, depending on the way the weather runs and the ability to get straw off, etc. happens. But look, there are a lot of other things that they could have added into the mix. And I'd love to have seen a menued option where people could do this in this field because it suits, or do that in that field because it suits better. Yes, we have to do things that would decrease the loss of nitrogen from our land, which is making its way to water. And it's in our best interest to stop that from happening because nitrogen is now so expensive. But, you know, if you take a crop like oilseed rape, if you have oilseed rape in the rotation, there is nothing better you can do with the land than have rape in it almost immediately after the previous crop being harvested, because it's just going to suck up so much nitrogen in the back end. It'll suck up virtually everything that's in the ground if it can be sown early. And surely having a crop like that in the rotation is a positive, you know. And there were lots of other things that you could do. You know, they could have been a little bit more insistent on the fact that farmers would adhere to the nitrogen index system so that there would be less risk of excess nitrogen being left over at the end of the day. And all those things could contribute to a better solution that people would want to try and improve on farm. Whereas now they just see this thing as an obstacle, another hurdle, another cost, because it is a cost to get it done. There are plus sides to it, and I'm one that will say that. But the negative side is just having to get all of this work done, sometimes in a very narrow window. And the question, the real question will be, well, what happens when it's a real dirty harvest and the ground is wet? Are we still expected to cultivate? Because in that situation, cultivation is negative in terms of the overall performance of the ground over time. So these are the things that farmers are talking about. I think if we got a good back end, people will probably willingly enough get in to try and get cultivation done. And some of them will be sowing catch crops with the cultivation, because more and more people have discovered that it's a good thing to do, particularly for land that's going to be sitting around until next spring before it's managed again in some way, form or fashion. So I think there's a lot of reaction there. On the overall captains, I think that the whole process of cap negotiation almost ignores tillage farmers, except for when it's taken money from somebody, because, you know, the planning of a rotation that involves winter crops, it basically starts now. You know, we're on the 28th of June as we're recording this. On or around the 14th of September, 14th of August, which is only 6 weeks away, oilseed rape will be being planted. And that is the start of next year's cropping season. And people need to know what they have to do in order to be able to fulfill whatever new requirements they will have to try and meet for the year ahead. And for a lot of farmers, that will probably involve rotation as an eco scheme that many of them can comply with. And you need to know, you know, what and where, what applies, what doesn't apply. And unfortunately, with the cap negotiation, you know, they keep saying nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. And therefore, we just don't know what actually is going to come through in terms of requirement.
Yeah, plenty of clarity needed, Andy, on that. And, you know, as people plan for cover crops and that as well, they really need to know what's going to happen. I suppose while we're on CAP, I might just move to schemes. So this week, the minister announced that the tillage incentive measure, farmers need to apply on agfood.ie to avail of that measure, and also for the protein crops as well. So go on to agfood.ie or else talk to your advisor on it and make sure that you get a letter in the post and just make sure that you sign up for those schemes.
You'll only get a letter in the post if you have extra tillage and if there's also grassland or some of the other equivalent grass crops coming into the rotation for the first time. So not everybody will get the letter. But if you get a letter, it means that you have some piece of land that is potentially eligible for this. And of course, anybody who's eligible certainly should be applying.
We mentioned oilseed rape there earlier, and I should note that the recommended lists are now out for winter oilseed rape. They're on farmersjournal.ie since last Friday. So DK expansion has been fully recommended, and Ambassador
and Aurelia are now provisionally recommended on the list as well. So take a look at those if you're considering planting oilseed rape. Andy, I know it's Tuesday and we're a bit early for when the podcast actually comes out, but markets are in the green today. What are they looking like overall?
Well, Siobhan, I say before we say about anything green, it's probably important to say what has happened over the last week and over the last number of weeks. You know, while futures markets are not a real market for farmers as such, they are indicative of price sentiment and price trends, etc. And from the peak of May, by last night, we'd seen futures prices drop for wheat drop almost 100 euro a ton, just shy of 100 euro a ton. A chunk of that has happened in the last week, and it's happening for a range of reasons. But we're back in the green today, but only in the green to the extent of between 3 and 4 euro. It's not as if there's been a massive turnaround, and we're seeing kind of the highs of 430s, high 430s now closing last night at 343. So that's where almost 100 euro dropping off them. As I'm talking to you now this minute, market is trading at around 346.75. So a little bit up, but, you know, not a lot up. And the bottom line is that when you're in a high end of a market, what they call a bull market, if you don't keep getting information that is adding to the scarcity, then markets kind of automatically want to slip back. And realistically, a couple of things have happened in the last short time. The sales of maize out of the US haven't been as high as expected. And there was a drought talked about in terms of production in 2022. Now, all of a sudden, the forecast has given rain. So the potential negative impacts on yield are regarded as having gone away. And all of a sudden, markets weaken in response to that. Parallel to that, you have the ongoing efforts in Europe to try and get grain out of the Ukraine to free up storage capacity for the 2022 crop. You know, whether they're successful or not, nobody knows yet. But the fact that people are trying to do it is another reason why the market would be weakening. And then the other big thing that's there is, given the price levels and given what's happening in other areas, what will be the overall global demand for grain following this harvest? Will it be the same as last year? Will it be higher, or will it be considerably lower in response to the higher prices? This is something that's worrying the market, and as a consequence, it's beginning to slip back. I think one of the things that we must always remember is that we are predominantly producing for the feed market, with the exception of malting barley, and feed grains will always have to compete with the cheapest imported alternative. It's not something we like as tillage farmers, but it's fact of life stuff. And for as long as we have to do that, then maize has become the crop that's setting the price standard. And all other crops are now being priced against the cost of imported maize in the physical market. And all of those things together have helped to depress prices. If I stand back, I would say on balance still, the most of the market information would suggest that we are unlikely to have significantly increased production this year, and indeed lots of people are talking about a lower production this year, but they're all potential outcomes. None of them are quite real yet, and therefore until we see harvest becoming in lower than anticipated, or estimates of harvest coming in lower than anticipated, then there's not a lot to drive the market up for the time being. So that's kind of where we are in markets, and oilseed rape markets, for what it's worth, they'll have fallen an awful lot further in recent weeks. You know, we not that long ago, we were looking at prices kind of around 900 euro for November 22 oilseed rape. Today that's trading at about 682. So the magnitude of the drop there has been considerably higher. You can probably argue it's back 150 to 200 euro a ton. Still high prices relative to where they would normally be. So they're still putting that crop into the realms of potentially high profitability if you can lock in at those prices. And interestingly, as I look forward to November 23, today's price for November 23 is 636 euro a ton. So, you know, it's considerably higher than the 390s that we had been living it in with in recent years. And of course, they need to be higher because of what's happening, the escalation in production costs for all crops in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we're on prices, Bort malt's price, the average since last Wednesday is 436.09 per tonne. So that dropped, the close last Wednesday was 435, down from 455 the week before. So a similar story to what you've been talking about, Andy. Weather for the coming days?
Siobhan, we're a bit early in terms of getting our weekly weather for the Farmers Journal in to be able to report on it. But for those for whom they need some bit of the handle, looking at Met Aaron's forecast for the week ahead, broken weather. We're dominated by a low pressure to the north for the remainder of this week, and that probably will give a risk of rain continuously out to about Sunday. But then for the early part of next week, the forecast as of now has it dominated by a high pressure which is coming up from the southwest. So at least the early part of next week goes back into the dry and warm category again, as is forecasted at this point. So hopefully we can see that. Most people won't object to the rain as long as it's soft and easy and not generating a lot of lodging pressure. Other than that, it'll do more good. And in fairness, that combination of sunshine and rain, that showery weather that we might get for the rest of the week, is generally associated with something that's good at ripening crops that are relatively mature. Helps to get them ready, helps to the awns to come off when you're harvesting six rows and all that type of stuff. So it's seasonal weather. We should get some of it this time of the year, and hopefully it will not have any major negative impact on yield or on moisture contents at harvest.
Thanks, Andy. And that's all we have time for. So thanks to everyone for listening, and stay safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.